Book 4, Chapter 1. The following winter, this was the year in which C.N. Pompey and M. Crassus were consuls, those Germans called the Usipetes, and likewise the Tencteri, with a great number of men, crossed the Rhine, not far from the place at which that river discharges itself into the sea. The motive for crossing that river was that, having been for several years harassed by the Suevi, they were constantly engaged in war, and hindered from the pursuits of agriculture. The nation of the Suevi is by far the largest and the most warlike nation of all the Germans. They are said to possess 100 cantons, from each of which they yearly send from their territories for the purpose of war 1,000 armed men. The others who remain at home maintain both themselves and those engaged in the expedition. The latter, again, in their turn, are in arms the year after. The former remain at home. Thus neither husbandry nor the art and practice of war are neglected. But among them there exists no private and separate land. Nor are they permitted to remain more than 1 year in one place for the purpose of residence. They do not live much on corn, but subsist for the most part on milk and flesh, and are much engaged in hunting, which circumstances must, by the nature of their food, and by their daily exercise and the freedom of their life, for having from boyhood been accustomed to no employment or discipline, they do nothing at all contrary to their inclination, both promote their strength and render them men of vast stature of body. And to such a habit have they brought themselves, that even in the coldest parts they wear no clothing whatever except skins, by reason of the scantiness of which a great portion of their body is bare, and besides they bathe in open rivers. Chapter 2. Merchants have access to them rather that they may have persons to whom they may sell those things which they have taken in war, than because they need any commodity to be reported to them. Moreover, even as to laboring cattle, in which the Gauls take the greatest pleasure, and which they procure at a great price, the Germans do not employ such as are imported, but those poor and ill-shaped animals which belong to their country. These, however, they render capable of the greatest labor by daily exercise. In cavalry actions, they frequently leap from their horses and fight on foot, and train their horses to stand still in the very spot on which they leave them, to which they retreat with great activity when there is occasion. Nor, according to their practice, is anything regarded as more unseemly, or more unmanly, than to use housings. Accordingly, they have the courage, though they may be themselves but few, to advance against any number whatever of horse mounted with housings. They on no account permit wine to be imported to them, because they consider that men degenerate in their powers of enduring fatigue, and are rendered effeminate by that commodity. Chapter 3. They esteem it their greatest praise as a nation that the lands about their territories lie unoccupied to a very great extent, inasmuch as they think that by this circumstance is indicated that a great number of nations cannot withstand their power. And thus on one side of the Suevi the lands are said to lie desolate for about 600 miles. On the other side they border the Ubii, whose state was large and flourishing, considering the condition of the Germans, and who are somewhat more refined than those of the same race and the rest of the Germans, and that because they border on the Rhine, and are much resorted to by merchants, and are accustomed to the manners of the Gauls, by reason of their proximity to them. Though the Suevi, after making the attempt frequently and in several wars, could not expel this nation from their territories, on account of the extent and population of their state, yet they made them tributaries, and rendered them less distinguished and powerful than they had ever been. Chapter 4. In the same condition were the Usipetes and the Tencteri, whom we have mentioned above, who for many years resisted the power of the Suevi, but being at last driven from their possessions, and having wandered through many parts of Germany, came to the Rhine, to districts which the Menapi inhabited, and where they had lands, houses, and villages on either side of the river. The latter people, alarmed by the arrival of so great a multitude, removed from those houses which they had on the other side of the river, and having placed guards on this side of the Rhine, proceeded to hinder the Germans from crossing. They, finding themselves, after they had tried all means, unable either to force a passage on account of their deficiency in shipping, or cross by stealth on account of the guards of the Menapi, pretended to return to their own settlements and districts. And, after having proceeded 3 days' march, returned, and their cavalry, having performed the whole of this journey in one night, cut off the Menapi, who were ignorant of and did not expect their approach, and who, having moreover been informed of the departure of the Germans by their scouts, and without apprehension, returned to their villages beyond the Rhine. Having slain these and seized their ships, they crossed the river before that part of the Menapi who were at peace in their settlements over the Rhine were apprised of their intention, and, seizing all their houses, maintained themselves upon their provisions during the rest of the winter. Chapter 5. Kaisar, when informed of these matters, fearing the fickle disposition of the Gauls, who are easily prompted to take up resolutions, and much addicted to change, considered that nothing was to be entrusted to them, for it is the custom of that people to compel travelers to stop, even against their inclination, and inquire what they may have heard, or may know, respecting any matter. And in towns the common people throng around merchants, and force them to state from what countries they come, and what affairs they know of there. They often engage in resolutions concerning the most important matters, induced by these reports and stories alone, of which they must necessarily instantly repent, since they yield to mere unauthorized reports, and since most people give to their questions answers framed agreeably to their wishes. Chapter 6. Kaisar, being aware of their custom, in order that he might not encounter a more formidable war, sets forward to the army earlier in the year than he was accustomed to do. When he had arrived there, he discovered that those things which he had suspected would occur had taken place, that embassies had been sent to the Germans by some of the states, and that they had been entreated to leave the Rhine, and had been promised that all things which they desired should be provided by the Gauls. Allured by this hope, the Germans were then making excursions to greater distances, and had advanced to the territories of the Eburones and the Condruzi, who were under the protection of the Treveri. After summoning the chiefs of Gaul, Kaisar thought proper to pretend ignorance of the things which he had discovered, and having conciliated and confirmed their minds, and ordered some cavalry to be raised, resolved to make war against the Germans. Chapter 7. Having provided corn and selected his cavalry, he began to direct his march towards those parts in which he heard the Germans were. When he was distant from them only a few days' march, ambassadors came to him from their state, whose speech was as follows: that the Germans neither make war upon the Roman people first, nor do they decline, if they are provoked, to engage with them in arms, for that this was the custom of the Germans handed down to them from their forefathers, to resist whatsoever people make war upon them, and not to avert it by entreaty. This, however, they confessed, that they had come hither reluctantly, having been expelled from their country. If the Romans were disposed to accept their friendship, they might be serviceable allies to them, and let them either assign them lands, or permit them to retain those which they had acquired by their arms. That they are inferior to the Suevi alone, to whom not even the immortal gods can show themselves equal. That there was none at all besides on earth whom they could not conquer. Chapter 8. To these remarks, Kaisar replied in such terms as he thought proper, but the conclusion of his speech was that he could make no alliance with them if they continued in Gaul, that it was not probable that they who were not able to defend their own territories should get possessions of those of others, nor were there any lands lying waste in Gaul which could be given away, especially to so great a number of men, without doing wrong to others. But they might, if they were desirous, settle in the territories of the Ubii, whose ambassadors were then with him, and were complaining of the aggressions of the Suevi and requesting assistance from him, and that he would obtain this request from them. Chapter 9. The ambassadors said that they would report these things to their countrymen, and, after having deliberated on the matter, would return to Kaisar after the third day. They begged that he would not in the meantime advance his camp nearer to them. Kaiser said that he could not grant them even that, for he had learned that they had sent a great part of their cavalry over the Meuse to the Ambivariti some days before for the purpose of plundering and procuring forage. He supposed that they were then waiting for these horse, and that the delay was caused on this account. Chapter 10. The Meuse rises from Mount La Vogue, which is in the territories of the Lingones, and, having received a branch of the Rhine, which is called the Wall, forms the island of the Batavi, and not more than 80 miles from it falls into the ocean. But the Rhine takes its course among the Lapanti, who inhabit the Alps, and is carried with a rapid current for a long distance through the territories of the Sarunates, Helveti, Sequani, Mediomatrici, Tribuci, and Treviri, and when it approaches the ocean, divides into several branches, and having formed many and extensive islands, a great part of which are inhabited by savage and barbarous nations, of whom there are some who are supposed to live on fish and the eggs of seafowl, flows into the ocean by several mouths. Chapter 11. When Kaiser was not more than 12 miles distant from the enemy, the ambassadors returned to him, as had been arranged, who, meeting him on the march, earnestly entreated him not to advance any further. When they could not obtain this, they begged him to send on a dispatch to those who had marched in advance of the main army, and forbid them to engage, and grant them permission to send ambassadors to the Ubi, and if the princes and senate of the latter would give them security by oath, they assured Kaiser that they would accept such conditions as might be proposed by him, and requested that he would give them the space of 3 days for negotiating these affairs. Kaiser thought that these things tended to the self-same point as their other proposal, namely, that in consequence of a delay of 3 days intervening, their horse, which were at a distance, might return. However, he said that he would not that day advance further than 4 miles for the purpose of procuring water. He ordered that they should assemble at that place in as large a number as possible the following day, that he might inquire into their demands. In the meantime, he sends messengers to the officers who had marched in advance with all the cavalry to order them not to provoke the enemy to an engagement, and if they themselves were assailed, to sustain the attack until he came up with the army. Chapter 12. But the enemy, as soon as they saw our horse, the number of which was 5,000, whereas they themselves had not more than 8,000 horse, because those which had gone over the Meuse for the purpose of foraging had not returned, while our men had no apprehensions, because their ambassadors had gone away from Kaiser a little before, and that day had been requested by them as a period of truce, made an onset on our men, and soon threw them into disorder. When our men in their turn made a stand, they, according to their practice, leaped from their horses to their feet, stabbing our horses in the belly and overthrowing a great many of our men, put the rest to flight, and drove them forward so much alarmed that they did not desist from their retreat till they had come in sight of our army. In that encounter, 74 of our horse were slain, among them Piso, an Aquitanian, a most valiant man and descended from a very illustrious family, whose grandfather had held the sovereignty of his state and had been styled friend by our senate. He, while he was endeavoring to render assistance to his brother, who was surrounded by the enemy, and whom he rescued from danger, was himself thrown from his horse, which was wounded under him, but still opposed his antagonists with the greatest intrepidity, as long as he was able to maintain the conflict. When at length he fell, surrounded on all sides, and after receiving many wounds, and his brother, who had then retired from the fight, observed it from a distance, he spurred on his horse, threw himself upon the enemy, and was killed. Chapter 13. After this engagement, Kaiser considered that neither ought ambassadors to be received to audience, nor conditions be accepted by him from those who, after having sued for peace by way of stratagem and treachery, had made war without provocation, and, to wait till the enemy's forces were augmented and their cavalry had returned, he concluded would be the greatest madness. And knowing the fickleness of the Gauls, he felt how much influence the enemy had already acquired among them by this one skirmish. He, therefore, deemed that no time for converting measures ought to be afforded them. After having resolved on these things and communicated his plans to his lieutenants and quaestor in order that he might not suffer any opportunity for engaging to escape him, a very seasonable event occurred, namely that on the morning of the next day a large body of Germans, consisting of their princes and old men, came to the camp to him to practice the same treachery and dissimulation. But, as they asserted for their purpose of acquitting themselves for having engaged in a skirmish the day before, contrary to what had been agreed and to what, indeed, they themselves had requested, and also if they could by any means obtain a truce by deceiving him. Kaiser, rejoicing that they had fallen into his power, ordered them to be detained. He then drew all his forces out of the camp and commanded the cavalry, because he thought they were intimidated by the late skirmish, to follow in the rear. Chapter 14. Having marshaled his army in three lines, and in a short time performed a march of 8 miles, he arrived at the camp of the enemy before the Germans could perceive what was going on, who, being suddenly alarmed by all the circumstances, both by the speediness of our arrival and the absence of their own officers, as time was afforded neither for concerting measures nor for seizing their arms, are perplexed as to whether it would be better to lead out their forces against the enemy, or to defend their camp, or seek their safety by flight. Their consternation being made apparent by their noise and tumult, our soldiers, excited by the treachery of the preceding day, rushed into the camp. Such of them as could readily get their arms for a short time withstood our men, and gave battle amongst their carts and baggage wagons. But the rest of the people, consisting of boys and women, for they had left their country and crossed the Rhine with all their families, began to fly in all directions, in pursuit of whom Kaiser sent the cavalry. Chapter 15. The Germans, when, upon hearing a noise behind them, they looked and saw that their families were being slain, throwing away their arms and abandoning their standards, fled out of the camp, and when they had arrived at the confluence of the Meuse and the Rhine, the survivors, despairing of further escape, as a great number of their countrymen had been killed, threw themselves into the river, and there perished, overcome by fatigue, fear, and the violence of the stream. Our soldiers, after the alarm of so great a war, for the number of the enemy amounted to 430,000, returned to their camp, all safe to a man, very few even being wounded. Kaiser granted those whom he had detained in the camp liberty of departing. They, however, dreading revenge and torture from the Gauls, whose lands they had harassed, said that they desired to remain with him. Kaiser granted them permission.